Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Francavilla Show. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Francavilla, board-certified family physician and diplomate of the American Board of Obesity Medicine. I've been helping patients lose weight to treat and prevent medical problems for the last 10 years, and I'm taking what I've learned from them to you. In this podcast, you will learn the science behind why you struggle with your weight and what to do about it, tips for common challenges, work to fight bias about what a healthy weight really is, and improve your relationship with food and your body. Please remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. This podcast is meant to be informational in nature only, not medical advice. Please seek out care from your physician for your specific needs. Okay, let's get started. All right. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Dr. Francavilla Show. Today, we are going to talk about Zepbound and Wegovy and what women need to know about these medications and weight loss in general. Joining me, I have an expert in the field of women's health and obesity medicine. I have Dr. Stephanie Persendeck. She is double board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, as well as obesity medicine. And she's been in the field of OBGYN for more than 15 years, as well as getting her obesity certification in 2021. She covers multiple hospital systems to take care of OBGYN care. And then she also owns her own obesity clinic called Inclusa Health and Wellness, which is near Spokane, Washington. She is fascinated by the treatment of obesity, specifically in women throughout all stages of their lives, and she loves teaching future physicians about OBGYN and weight management through her university teaching positions, preceptorships, as well as her product authorships for McGraw-Hill and ABC Board Review. So, expert in the field of women's health and obesity, so excited to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the field of weight loss?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. So I had my own weight loss journey about 15 years ago. And so going through that journey, we unfortunately didn't have the availability of these great medications. So it took a lot of creative effort to try to figure out how to help best for specific women's health issues that I was having to try to lose weight on my own. And so when I became more comfortable in treating women's health, you know, with my several years of being an OBGYN, the opportunity came up that I was able to get board certified in obesity medicine. And then I was very lucky to get board certified right around the time that these excellent products were coming out. So that made it even more fascinating.
Yeah, it's been a very exciting time for this field. I've been doing this for more than a decade, and the tools have changed in that time period. And, you know, specifically in the last 2 years or so, Wegovy and Zepbound as these really powerful medications that are effective for the majority of people who take them. And there are some unique considerations for women on these medications. And so let's dive into that today. In general, for women, what are some of the unique considerations that we need to, you know, consider when trying to lose weight, or, you know, maybe why it might be harder to lose weight? What's different about weight loss for women?
Well, I think the biggest thing that people come and ask me about all the time is, I think my hormones are off. And I think that is a very interesting question that we talk about quite often in the OBGYN world. Well, hormones are always changing. If you have both regular or irregular cycles, your hormones are going up and down all the time throughout the months and years. And they definitely, the levels change throughout our time. You know, obviously in our 20s and 30s, they're very different than in our 40s and 50s. But if you think about that from like a male versus female standpoint, male hormones for the most part are fairly stable, whereas ours go up and down, up and down. So that really plays a part in how our body continues to regulate our weight. So what I tell my patients often though, is sometimes the hormones that we're concerned about in obesity medicine are very different than maybe the hormones that you consider as a female. And so I love to have that conversation about your hormones may be off, but maybe not the ones that you're thinking about.
I think that's the exact phrase that I use. I think I might even have that on my website. Like, yep, it's probably your hormones, but maybe not the ones you're thinking of. And a lot of that is, you know, hormones like insulin and a lot of these hormones that regulate appetite and weight. And there's an interplay between those and our female hormones as well, right? But a lot of times it can be like a chicken and an egg situation, right? Where weight is disrupting our hormonal regulation just as much as our hormones are disrupting our weight, right? And so like where to start with that chicken and egg conversation might vary from patient to patient. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. I always tell people about this cycle and we hear about insulin resistance a lot. And I think, you know, that's definitely like a hot button topic that we talk about and people want to know how we can test for insulin resistance. And, you know, there are certain things that we can do, but even if we test for those things, it might not change the conversation that we have. So I think I remind my patients that insulin certainly plays a big part in that, but weight plays a part in our insulin, which then plays a part in our weight, which plays a part in our insulin. So it's that thing that's that cyclic, you know, increase and in how difficult it is to lose weight. And that certainly is related to what stage you are in your life as a female.
Well, let's talk about PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I did a full episode on this maybe a month or so ago. And so people want like a lot more details about PCOS in general and what that is and how to figure out if you have it, you might want to check out that episode. But I guess briefly, what is PCOS? And specifically with our new medications like Wegovy and Zepbound, what's the role for someone who has PCOS and those medications?
Yeah, well, PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome is definitely a dysregulation in hormones. But again, those hormones, you know, certainly are, from my standpoint as a women's health expert, estrogen and testosterone. So women traditionally just have higher levels of those hormones and they don't fluctuate in a normal fashion like we would see in somebody that's having menstrual periods every month. And so when that happens, the way that testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, and insulin all function together, that can make insulin resistance a lot higher. And so with the increase in estrogen, the insulin then just doesn't work as well as we would normally see in an average person. So when we're looking at treatment for that, not only do we want to treat weight to make that insulin resistance lower, so insulin is functioning at a better rate or at a peak optimization of how we absorb and store carbohydrates, we also need to treat all the underlying conditions that can come along with that PCOS, which would be, you know, the combination of metabolic syndrome. So cholesterol, blood pressure, and sugar levels. And so all of those things can, if they're not treated well, create future problems.
And so when it comes to using a medication like Wegovy or Zepbound, you know, what should a woman who has PCOS expect from a medication like that? What would a role of those medications be for someone with PCOS?
Well, so the unique thing that we see oftentimes in people that have PCOS is that the medication has kind of two separate pathways that it works on. So it helps with that insulin regulation, which is definitely one of the underlying conditions that we see in PCOS. So we can definitely break that increased cycle of, you know, weight causes insulin resistance, then insulin resistance causes increased weight. So we can regulate that and get the insulin to a normal level so that it's helping put the extra carbohydrate that we eat in the appropriate place and make it so that we're not gaining weight. But on the other side of the spectrum, we also have regulation of those other hormones we're talking about. So we talked about GLP-1 is a GLP-1 agonist. So that hormone can then help regulate ghrelin, which is our hunger hormone. So we can decrease our ghrelin. It increases our leptin, which is our satisfaction hormone. And then it increases the time that food takes to leave the stomach. So then we eat smaller portions and we eat less often. So that's why we see these excellent medications helping people with both type 2 diabetes as well as weight, because it functions on both of those things. Though most people don't have type 2 diabetes with PCOS, it's definitely something that is possible if we don't appropriately treat that condition because of that insulin resistance. So that's why this medication is excellent for people in that condition.
Awesome. So kind of hitting both the different pathways. And again, I think the struggle for so many of my patients who come to see me for weight loss for whatever reason is, you know, these sort of, again, these chicken and the egg situations where, you know, until you fix some of these underlying causes, there's not, it's really hard to lose weight, right? So we have to regulate appetite. We have to regulate insulin. And when we can do those things and people can finally be successful, if we are, you know, just trying to focus on weight loss, sometimes the metabolic system is so off that we can't really do that.
Yeah, we used to have, or we still have, obviously, fantastic medications that definitely can help regulate our appetite. It can help regulate our cravings. But again, like for people with PCOS, it doesn't really get at that, you know, metabolic syndrome regulating those specific hormones. So that's why the technology that we have now is just so much more focused on treating the actual condition. Not that the other medications didn't, because they help regulate the, you know, triggers that we have, but this can hit like three separate things that really help with that specific issue.
Switching gears a little bit, though, probably some overlap that we can talk about. For women who are planning a pregnancy, they would like to get pregnant at some point in the future, sooner or later, and they have been told that they would have a health benefit from losing weight before they conceive. What role do these meds have? Or, you know, when these meds aren't appropriate, perhaps, like, what would you recommend? So for women who are, you know, seeing pregnancy in the future, but are trying to optimize their health first, what should they be thinking about?
Yeah, so these medications are fantastic to help get people to their goal, to get women to their goal of an optimized weight, as well as cholesterol, blood pressure, and sugar prior to getting pregnant. And so what we recommend as OBGYNs prior to pregnancy is, first of all, making pregnancy easier without having to go down the pathways of like IVF or IUI. We recommend losing around 10% of your total body weight. So sometimes even losing about 10% of your total body weight, you can kick yourself into having more regular cycles or having that normal rise and fall of hormones, and you may not need those extra treatments for to achieve pregnancy.
So even if your BMI is on the higher end, it's above, you know, 40, a 10% weight loss may be enough to improve fertility.
Correct. Yeah. We can't obviously predict what's going to happen from person to person, but traditionally the recommendation would be about 10%. And some people would be surprised that even with that 10% weight loss, our hormones regulate enough to then get ourselves into a normal cycle. And so then above and beyond that, optimizing that insulin pathway to try to lower our metabolic syndrome risk. So lowering our blood pressure, increased circulating blood sugar, and then of course, lowering our cholesterol and triglycerides will just make pregnancy that much healthier. And so it puts patients at lower risk of pregnancy complications, such as gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, and high blood pressure in pregnancy. And all of those then can also cause complications with the baby in the future. So what we don't really think about is how our genetics and how our health at the time that we get pregnant can eventually affect our babies in the future. So with epigenetics, it can actually make the babies at a bigger risk of having diabetes in the future, high blood pressure in the future. And so we want to optimize all of those things prior to even getting pregnant, so that doesn't happen for our children.
Yes. And there is a whole new paper from Nature that talks about some of these epigenetic effects and, you know, those effects in pregnancy. It goes into a deep dive on how maybe some of the things we're eating and some of the things in our environment are also affecting that. And there's an awesome podcast episode that was just a week or so ago as well on that topic with Dr. Younglove. So if you want to learn more about that, that is another one to check out. But you know, essentially losing weight before pregnancy is going to possibly improve your chance of getting pregnant. And it is also going to potentially improve the health of your baby, like long-term, not even just, you know, during pregnancy or for when they're a baby, but may impact their lifelong health.
Absolutely. And so I think that what we also experience using some of these medications is that it can create positive changes in the types of things that we eat and the amount of exercise that we do and our commitment to our own health that then will help us commit to the health of our children in the future, not only from the pregnancy standpoint, but hopefully even after babies are born.
Now, if someone takes a medication like Zepbound or Wegovy, they cannot continue taking it during pregnancy at this point, right? It's not recommended.
Correct. So right now, because we haven't studied these in pregnancy very frequently, we recommend getting off of these medications for around 8 weeks prior to conceiving. That is currently being studied now to see if we can continue to treat type 2 diabetes in pregnancy with these medications, but still the jury is out on how safe they are. So definitely, because we want to protect the safety of ourselves and our kids, we want to make sure that you come off these medications around 8 weeks prior to conceiving.
But that could end up meaning that you're off the medication for at least 9 months, right? If not, you know, more than a year by the time, you know, you've been off it for 8 weeks and you get pregnant, you could be off of it for more than a year easily. So if we're transitioning someone, if a patient is taking Wegovy or Zepbound, they've had good results, everything's looking better, they conceive, they've gone off the medication. Now what? Because we know that, you know, most people are going to gain weight when they stop the medication. Now they're pregnant. What can this person do, you know, during pregnancy to minimize that? Or are there alternative options available to them besides these medications at that point?
Yeah. So I think that the hope for most patients that are taking these medications would be creating better habits that would be at least helpful to people in pregnancy. But as we know, this will regulate all of our hormones eventually back to how they were before. So some things that we can see that can be helpful in pregnancy would be putting patients on metformin. So metformin can be helpful and it's very compatible with pregnancy. It's definitely not as powerful as Zepbound or Wegovy, but it certainly can be helpful and it is well studied in pregnancy to help regulate that insulin. There are no other traditional weight loss medications that we suggest in pregnancy because of the effects to the baby, but also we don't traditionally want people to lose weight in pregnancy. We want you to create a healthy weight to support your pregnancy and your baby. But traditionally, the medication we would see the most would be metformin.
Yeah. And when I've, you know, done the research for talks that I've given on this topic, a lot of small changes make a big difference in pregnancy. And so the way you eat during pregnancy may not be the same as the way you ate before you were pregnant. I certainly could not eat the diet I normally eat when I was pregnant. My body just wanted different things. But we don't have to have perfection ever, and we certainly don't have to have perfection during pregnancy, right? So making sure we're getting, you know, fiber and whole grains and lower glycemic foods, right? Not things that are super sugary or that are going to spike our blood glucose a lot. Getting whatever level of movement's working for our body. People hear me talk about Peloton and training for marathons and CrossFit. I couldn't do any of that personally when I was pregnant. My body just said no, and I had to listen to it. For me, I could walk, I could do prenatal yoga. And so it doesn't have to be the same level of intensity, I think, when you're pregnant. It's the little things add up actually a lot more during pregnancy than for other people, because we're just trying to prevent gaining a lot of weight during that pregnancy, trying to have a normal weight gain during the pregnancy. And again, just eating a generally healthy diet. It's not a restrictive weight loss diet. We're just trying to move more. You don't have to be, you know, doing crazy intense exercise. And so for me, with my patients, when we go through this journey, I just check in with them monthly. Like, you know, even though we're not working on weight loss anymore, we may not be actively, you know, adjusting medications, just checking in, right? Like, you know, how's nutrition going? How's movement going? What can we do? How do we work within some of those pregnancy symptoms that can make eating healthy and moving challenging for some women?
Absolutely. And I think that the thing that we don't really remember about pregnancy is that you are carrying around a considerable amount of weight. And so you in itself, just moving around, doing your normal daily activities, you're moving more weight. So you are in theory, burning more calories and getting more exercise by doing that. So like you said, any extra movement on top of that is going to be that much more beneficial just based on the fact that you are doing that with this extra.
That's so funny. I can't believe I never thought of it that way, but that's true. You know, it's like carrying around a 20-pound medicine ball during your workout or putting on a weight vest or something. So that's a great point. Even walking is now a much more strenuous activity when pregnant. So yeah. And I think, you know, one thing that I've seen, and I'm sure you don't do this because you take care of pregnant women for a living, is that sometimes when someone has been working with an expert, with an obesity physician or whoever on weight, and they get pregnant, it's like, see you when you have the baby. And so you might ask like, hey, can you still see me and offer me, you know, just the support and the coaching? I know it may be different, or you may need to find someone else for that part of your journey. But I think like a lot of times what I see is people just get kind of abandoned when they're pregnant, right? It's like, well, just focus on the baby. And you're like, well, I'm this whole person who has all these other health things too when I'm pregnant.
Yeah, I definitely think that meeting with an obesity medicine specialist or even your OB, if they are comfortable with doing that, as an OBGYN, you know, supporting somebody through pregnancy, we see them on such a regular basis anyway. Yeah. Having an OB that is supportive of that nutritional and exercise journey is really important.
But so our poor OBs, I mean, they're so rushed. Like, you know, you guys just yes. don't have enough time to have very long conversations yeah. with, yes. with the way we, you know, run OB care in the country.
Yes. Yeah, that in itself is certainly a challenge. And I agree with that. So having an obesity medicine specialist that's comfortable treating women in pregnancy is really important as well, because we can just talk about just like, how have you been eating? Like, what's your normal daily, you know, diet look like? And are you getting enough fruits and vegetables? And how much water are you drinking? Because that's another consideration, is a hydration in pregnancy. You just need to stay more hydrated because you have a whole second person inside of you, you know, taking up all of your hydration. And also just what feels good in terms of exercise, because like you said, that exercise is just going to be very different.
Right, right. Anything counts, right? And that's always the case, you know, for everyone. Any movement is better than not moving, for sure. Even if it's just standing up for a little bit, that has a benefit over sitting. Despite the fact that I end up sitting most of my day.
Right.
So kind of last, you know, special group of women, I guess, here, which is women who are in perimenopause or who have gone through menopause. What role do these medications have for those women, and what special considerations do they need to consider?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, that's something that we don't really consider much, is like what happens after our cycles stop being regular. We are so used to having these swings in hormones to, you know, create the ability to get pregnant if you want to, or to, you know, continue our normal until that does not happen anymore. So when you become perimenopausal, your hormones start to slowly trend down to zero. And then of course, when you get to the menopausal age, you stop having periods because your estrogen is low enough that we can't create periods anymore. So that again plays off of that insulin resistance. When your estrogen and your insulin are so interrelated, we start to develop more abdominal adipose tissue or fat cells because our estrogen is transitioning down to a lower level. The fact is that, you know, menopause is somewhat regular in that the average age of menopause is 51 to 52 in the United States. We didn't live past, you know, 60 to 70, except for the last maybe 200 years. Like we, by the time that we got to menopausal age, we were kind of transitioning to end of life at that point. Now we're living into our 80s and 90s and sometimes 100s. And so we don't really know what to do with that period of time. And so now with these good technologies, we can help stop that natural gain of weight, so that we can live longer and healthier and protect our bones and protect our muscles and, you know, not have to have joint replacements and not have to have high blood pressure and high cholesterol in these years that we weren't used to having, but the last 200 years. So that regulation of our insulin resistance is really helpful for people in that menopausal, perimenopausal age group. The other consideration is people in that, you know, later stage of life age group past menopause, a lot of the times they already come with other health issues. And so we can't always prescribe medications that we would have traditionally prescribed before because of risk of stroke and heart attack, as well as other issues.
Right. May not be candidates for our older medications like phentermine. One thing I always like to emphasize too with that, postmenopausal group of patients or older women is the muscle mass changes, right? So it's pretty normal part of menopause to gain some weight around your belly. And at the same time, because you have less estrogen, you're not building as much muscle. And so you lose a little muscle and you gain a little fat, sometimes a lot, depending on, you know, how it affects you. And so for that group of women, especially if they're losing weight on a medication, really focusing on strength training, getting that muscle mass, at least keeping it, right? You may not put on muscle, but let's keep every bit of muscle you have at that point in your life, and getting enough protein in every day to build that muscle. And so I think that group, I emphasize that more than any other group, because that's such an at-risk group to already struggle with muscle mass.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you definitely hit the nail on the head with that one, because what we don't really remember is like, why do we eat the certain foods that we eat, right? So the protein is definitely going to help with that muscle mass building, or like you said, just maintaining. So we hear protein's better for us all the time, but not everybody really thinks about why. Well, the other issue that we see is that resting metabolic rate. So the amount of calories that we burn completely at rest is 70% of our calorie burning in a day. So if we decrease that muscle mass, which unfortunately we don't have a lot of control over in terms of hormonal regulation, you know, if that starts to naturally decrease, we need to then do something to offset that by increasing our weight-bearing exercise so that we can, like you said, at least maintain what we have so that we can keep that calorie burning where it's at. The other thing to consider is protecting our fall risk, protecting our fracture risk, which is all going to then play a part in that muscle building or that weight bearing activity. The people in the, you know, advanced age groups definitely have bigger risks of that.
Yeah. So some of that is the strength training. And then I've been emphasizing balance a little bit more with my patients, which can be as easy as doing like steps up and down on stairs, doing some yoga, but, you know, being able to catch yourself when you're falling is also super helpful. So strength and balance, you know, something that we need to focus on exercise wise. Well, there was one more thing that I meant to talk about earlier and we didn't, but I think it's really important when we talk about women and Zepbound and Wegovy, which is Zepbound has one sort of interesting thing about it, which is because it does delay how long things stay in the stomach, it can affect the absorption of oral birth control pills. So if you are taking a pill of some sort to prevent pregnancy, that medication, every time we increase the dose of it for 4 weeks, it can decrease the effectiveness of that birth control pill. And so if you are trying to prevent pregnancy, you're using a birth control pill and you are on Zepbound, what should you do, Dr. Frisendeck? What is the best solution there?
Yeah, well, I think we kind of forget that we have so many different kinds, so many excellent kinds of birth control that we can try, because birth control pills are usually our gold standard. They've been around the longest, but in this unique situation, they're the least effective. So you can always try using the combination patch, which is the estrogen progesterone patch, because it's obviously not running through your digestive system, or the NuvaRing, which is the vaginal intravaginal ring, because those are very similar in formulation to the birth control pill, but then they're different, obviously a different way to use them. They're not ingested. So if you like the way that the pill functions and gives you a good cycle, then those are other options. The other options that are usually a little bit more tricky if you've never used an implantable medication before, you can use the Nexplanon, which is the implantable rod in your arm, or an IUD. And those are nice because they are what we call LARC, or long-acting reversible contraception. So they don't require you to take something every week, every month, or every day. And we place them and then they can be removed whenever you're ready to then consider pregnancy at that point. And they're pretty quickly reversible. So once we take them out, you can still get pregnant pretty quickly thereafter. So you don't have to necessarily wait for a washout period or anything like that.
Awesome. So may need to consider changing your birth control if you're on pills on Zepbound, or at a minimum, using a barrier method like condoms while you are changing doses of that medication. So very key point for women, I think, who might be considering taking these medications. Well, Dr. Frisendeck, any follow-up, anything we missed, anything you want to make sure to let us know about?
Well, I don't really know if I have anything else for you guys
We covered a lot.
I know we did, but I think the take home point is that women just function differently than men, or we do have hormonal dysregulation that causes some of these issues. So finding a good obesity medicine provider or primary care provider that supports your journey in weight loss and is this supportive of you using types of medications like this is really important. And we're certainly out there.
Yeah. If people want to find or connect with you or your clinic, how can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So as mentioned before, I own Inclusa Health and Wellness. So you can find us on the internet at our website, just www.inclusahealthandwellness.com, all spelled out. And that has our contact information for emailing us or scheduling an online appointment.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And until next week, everyone, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Dr. Francavilla Show, where we learn about all things related to weight and health. If you love this podcast, make sure to leave those 5-star reviews and share this podcast with a friend or loved one. If you have a topic about weight and health you want me to tackle, head over to the website, thedrfrancavillashow.com, to submit your question. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. Take care.